my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey friends, welcome to episode 253 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast, and it is the third Monday of the month, and we're talking about 80s wrestling. It is Wrestling with the 80s. My co-host this week is Travis Yates. He is at the Travis Yates on Twitter. And Travis and I explained during the course of our conversation as well. Travis and I go way back. He's one of those first people I met here in Southern Illinois when I moved to start a job at WSIL-TV back in 2004. In fact, Travis and Chad were two of the very first people I met and two of the biggest wrestling fans that I'd ever met. Travis has been a consistent co-host now on Chad's Positive Cynicism podcast. They talk pop culture and sports and different things. And I believe they go the first Tuesday of every month over on Positive Cynicism. So be sure to check them out. Go back and listen to those previous episodes. Travis is very well versed in pop culture, has a master's degree in it, as a matter of fact. And just an all-around good guy, and I enjoy the conversations that I have had with him and the conversations that I hear him have with Chad on Positive Cynicism, but also with Greg Mahochko. They recently recorded an episode of Nerds United not too very long ago, so hop back into the Jittery Monkey archives and check out all those shows, whether it's Positive Cynicism, whether it's My 1-2-3 Cents right here. You can also listen to, of course, Nerd United and the Five Heart podcast. Not a whole lot going on for me in the wrestling world. You know, the month of August and the first two weekends in September, we had shows, Stride Pro Wrestling shows, every weekend in August except for one. And then in September, the first two weekends of September, were back-to-back wrestling shows. So this weekend on Sunday, as I record this open for Monday's podcast, I'm happy to report that I did not have to wrestle because I am one half of the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions. And don't get me wrong, I love wrestling. But man, I've said it before, at age 46, my old body needs a break every once in a while, so I am enjoying a weekend at home with family and friends. My daughter's birthday was over the weekend. Some good friends of ours, a couple of them had birthdays as well, so we've been celebrating accordingly. But overall, a good weekend, a good week, and I am looking forward to the next Stride Pro Wrestling show. One of them coming up is a secret. I can't talk about it because the group that's putting it on wants it to be a surprise. However, on October 12th, it's a Saturday night, and it's Fright Night for Stride Pro Wrestling. I'm looking forward to that. Heath and I will be defending the tag team titles, and there'll be all kinds of other fun stuff going on, I'm sure, Halloween-related too. So be sure to check out strideprowrestling.com for those details. And again, stick around with my123cents.com. Check out the YouTube channel. I am working on more videos, trying to come up with some ideas and concepts. Nothing permanent or nothing set in stone just quite yet, but I'm working on it, and I'm going to have some things. And I'm also going to have some announcements regarding the My 1-2-3 Cents Stride Pro Wrestling Christmas Toy Drive. We're aiming to collect action figures. I have a bunch of them sitting here looking at me right now that I've already started picking up. So we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come as well. Stick around, though. My buddy Travis Yates is the guest.
We're here to show you the ropes at Pizza Inn. When it comes to original thin crust pizza, nothing can beat it. Except cheesy pan pizza. Come on, you guys, call it a draw. With the all-you-can-eat buffet, you can always go back for more. All the pizza, salad, and muffins you can handle, made with the freshest ingredients for a super low price.
I just got a new Pizza Inn phone for $14.95.
Well, I want one of those, too. Give me that.
Hello? It's for you, Kevin. Hello.
Hey friends, as promised, and I don't want to use the term old friend because you are younger than me, and but a longtime friend from my days at WSIL-TV, Travis Yates joins the podcast, and Travis is a frequent guest on the Positive Cynicism podcast with Chad Smart, and he also very recently was on Nerds United with Greg Mahochko. And Travis, I've got to tell you, I know I've known you many, many years, 15 plus years now, and I got to tell you, when I listen to you on Chad's podcast and on Greg's podcast, I love the you bring some legitimacy in terms of that articulation and that, you know, because you are a very, and I'm not trying to embarrass you or put you on the spot, but you are a very educated individual, many years of schooling, and I just love listening to your insight on things, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that, and thanks for having me on. And I feel like I'm in rarefied air here, getting to talk with one half of the tag team championship unit. So that's pretty cool. Quite the honor for me.
Well, thank you. As Travis mentioned, one half of the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions. We've got some dates coming up very soon. We'll talk more about that. Travis, I was thinking, as you know, when the topic of the Von Erichs won the Twitter poll that I had posted, there was one person I thought would be the perfect co-host for this, and that was you, obviously, because I remember when we worked together at WSIL, when I first moved here, there was Chad, there was you, there was Matt English, and Mike Kahn. I think those were like the four, and Randy Livingston, of course. And you guys were like these wrestling obsessed guys like I was at my last station, but nobody there was into it. Like, so I was, you know, I went through a dry spell of going to events and watching pay-per-views and stuff. So when I met you guys, I felt like we bonded very quickly over wrestling. And I knew that you were also a fan of those world-class championship wrestling days with the Von Erichs.
Yeah, you know, it's great when you get little pockets of fans like that. We're almost like our own little faction, right? Mm-hmm. We'd be a great heel faction, and we all bring different things to the table. You bring the snacks, and I'll bring the beer, you know, but somebody's going to be responsible for something in the group. And yeah, it was a great time when we all met and had some great memories. And absolutely, you and I definitely bonded over both our love of world class and then, of course, of the Von Erich family.
Yeah, and you know, years later, when you and Chad both moved away, we stayed connected through social media primarily, like many of us do still today. But I can remember, even before social media, the three of us, and this was even before texting was really wildly popular, and we would email each other ideas and storylines and just kind of this chat going back and forth. And that's actually kind of what was one of the contributing factors to me starting the My 1-2-3 Cents blog, was just having those conversations still and kind of what if scenarios and kind of fantasy booking and, you know, sharing opinions about what the current product, and by current product, I mean 10 years ago, what was on and what we were watching. So I appreciate that. And then, of course, we bonded over a couple of WrestleManias. We met up at WrestleMania 22 in Chicago. You were still in Illinois at the time. And then, of course, the three of us together went to WrestleMania, and I get to a point where I don't remember the numbers. I think it was 27 in Atlanta.
Sounds right. Mm-hmm.
And we were the Heenan family, and that was a hell of a time.
Well, and we started to do the cosplay thing at WrestleMania's just when it was a brand new thing. There was only a few other people there that were actually doing it, and the neatest thing was I felt like we were minor celebrities at that WrestleMania. And one of my favorite memories from that weekend was when we went to one of the autograph signings on WrestleMania weekend, and was Terry Runnels saw us.
Yes.
And just like stopped what she was doing and said, "You guys, get over here. I got to get my picture with you." And I thought, oh boy, this is just, this is just everything. Yeah. And we had so much fun putting that, the outfit together with you as the brain and me as the Brooklyn Brawler and Chad, of course, with his red mohawk as the Red Rooster.
We actually cut his hair that morning and then painted it red or spray painted or whatever we had for it to get at that Red Rooster look. But such a fun memory there. And there is talk of perhaps reuniting, getting the band back together for the upcoming WrestleMania in Tampa. So we'll have to stay tuned and see if those plans come to fruition. But Travis, when did you actually start watching wrestling?
So I got into wrestling, I'd say right around WrestleMania 2 and WrestleMania 3.
Okay.
My first memory of wrestling was watching the Hogan Bundy cage match at a buddy's house, I'm pretty sure on VHS. It wasn't live.
Okay.
And it was so funny because I haven't been shy about my anti-Hogan rhetoric through the years, but this was at the time I was, 10, 11 years old, and so I didn't know any better than I just to blindly follow Hulk Hogan. And so we were watching this match and we thought Bundy was going to win, and we were like, oh, we can't watch. And we both ran off to his bedroom and we were like waiting. And then we were listening to his dad. And then when we thought it was safe to come out, we ran out and there was Hogan celebrating. And so that was my first memory. And then of course, what a great year, to be a wrestling fan, the golden era, a lot of people called it, as the build to WrestleMania 3 and the Steamboat Savage match. And of course the Hogan and Andre match.
Absolutely. And so I know that you had spent time as a youth in the Quincy, Illinois area. Where did you grow up and did you have access to more than just WWF at the time?
So I moved around a lot, and I was in Chicago for a few years, and we had a lot of wrestling on all the broadcast channels. This was kind of when cable was still in its infancy, and so you had a lot of over-the-air options. Mm-hmm. And so I had access to NWA up there. Didn't have access to World Class on ESPN yet because we didn't have cable there. So it was actually when I then moved to Quincy in the mid-80s, and that was my first exposure to World Class. I'd say 1987.
Okay.
88 when I started watching the at that point it was, I think, Legends of World Class, because they were showing older footage along with some new stuff as well.
Okay, so you were able to get up to speed, because obviously this is back well before the internet and any kind of semblance of a WWE network or any kind of archiving video on demand system where you can watch virtually anything you want to these days. But I remember my dad and my brother and my uncle were all big wrestling fans, and I did not like it at the time. And this would have been early. This would have been like 80, 81, 82. And I do remember, because we grew lived in St. Louis, and obviously we had wrestling at the Chase, but also in syndication on Sunday mornings was the Superstars of WWF and World Class Championship Wrestling. And I remember World Class came on at 10 and then WWF came on at 11. And I remember watching the Ric Flair, Kerry Von Erich steel cage match from Christmas of 82 when the Freebirds, Terry Gordy slams the cage shut. And it might have been a recap. It might have been in real time. I don't remember specifically, but that is probably one of my very first wrestling memories. And there was something about that moment that just hooked me from that moment on.
That would make sense, because I'd say as hot as wrestling was all through, that may have been the hottest angle. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to, kind of catch up on it when I became a fan later in the 80s. But I almost became a student of the Squared Circle. I mean, I would just absorb any wrestling magazine that I could find. And so, of course, I caught up to speed real quick on what the Freebird Von Erich rivalry really meant, and the fact that it was still going on strong in the late 80s says something about how big that moment in 82 was. But yeah, that was just kicked off an amazing angle and rivalry that literally lasted the rest of the decade.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, Michael Hayes, Buddy Roberts, and Terry Bam Bam Gordy. And, you know, at that point it was Kevin Carey and David Von Erich were, you know, and they had 6-man tag team titles, and, you know, there were many great matches. They would do singles matches, they would do tag team matches, they would do 6-man tags. You know, and then tragically in early 84, the family lost David, who died in Japan. Now, did you see much? Because I know you said once you started watching, obviously David had passed away already by that point, but you're seeing stuff with the legends of World Class. What were your initial thoughts? Because a lot of people say that David was the one who was kind of destined to be the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and he had some great matches against Ric Flair. And I caught some of David, but, you know, like I said, he died pretty soon after I became a fan. What are your memories or thoughts on David?
Yes, same thing. I didn't see a whole lot, and the clips that I would see that aired on Legends of World Class were pretty old, and I think because of the fact that he'd been gone for several years at that point, you know, they didn't air too much of him. So and by that point, you know, I was always a Carey guy. This mm-hmm. is no secret, obviously. As are you, I know.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think just I was already all in on Carey. He was one of my favorites of all time. And so, you know, I always thought that Carey was still, if you take away the demons, of course, mm-hmm. that Carey was still the true superstar with the most to bring to the table for the wrestling business.
And let's transition into that, because you know, in hindsight, you see and read things, you know, what if this or what if that or whatever. Carey Von Erich, obviously, when David died, and I don't know how they decided between Kevin and Carey, because Kevin is an amazing athlete too. You know, has 2 sons now that are wrestling and is still attached to the business. I don't know how they decided that Carey was going to be the chosen one, so to speak, to face off against Ric Flair and win the NWA Heavyweight Championship. But he obviously had that look of a wrestling superstar, like you said. And I think, you know, after winning the title in 84, and, you know, he goes on to become or voted most popular wrestler by Pro Wrestling Illustrated readers, and then Match of the Year against Ric Flair that same year. I think late 84, early 85, he was a hot enough commodity. He could have made it in the WWF when Vince McMahon was going global. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree, and I know that there was talk when Vince had this whole plan to go national and to eschew the territory system that had been in place for so long and go out on his own and really poach from all the territories, the top guys, and he was trying to decide who was going to be his one guy that led the promotion, and it ultimately ended up being Hogan. But I'd heard for years, and it's always, as Hey Conrad would say, it's rumor and innuendo mm-hmm. for years that Carey was one of Vince's top choices, and Hogan was there, and then Jimmy Superfly Snuka was the third option if those two didn't work out. Well, obviously, Carey didn't, and I just don't think at the time with the ties to the family and the fact that World Class was still I think they might have even been officially a member of the NWA at the mm-hmm. time, that Carey just couldn't leave his family high and dry like that. And so I imagine that Vince approached him at that time. I'm sure dialogue was had, if not with him, then with Fritz about it. And, you know, people say, well, Carey didn't have the charisma But I mean, you put him in that element that young with Vince and all of those others, you know, a lot of those other guys didn't have it at first either, but then they grew as the WWF grew in that era. So he might have developed the charisma. I mean, imagine if, you know, working with Jimmy Hart on promos for a young Kerry Von Erich, what that would have done for him. So I think that it would have been an interesting choice. And obviously when we look back and say, play the what if game, yeah, he definitely would have succeeded, if not as the guy, then certainly as one of those second tier guys just right under Hogan.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because one of the podcasts that I love listening to is called Our Vantage Point, and they are all retro wrestling, and they, I follow them on Twitter as well. And they will share little clips, of old stuff that, and you know, like I said, I've been a fan since, you know, late 82, early 83, and they are showing stuff that I've never seen before that I didn't even know existed. And one clip that they showed just not too very long ago was a 20-year-old Kerry Von Erich wrestling at Madison Square Garden. Vince McMahon is doing the commentary. And I had no idea that this existed. And so, you know, when you hear that rumor of, you know, Vince may or may not have been looking at him, I mean, I'm more inclined after seeing this clip, you know, because Kerry was on his radar. He had wrestled and Vince called the match. So, you know, you always wonder what if, and like you said earlier, taking away those take the demons out of the factor, factoring things. He certainly had the look, and I think that charisma could develop or could be taught, because you know, there were a lot of guys back then that didn't necessarily have the promo skill. You know, Tito Santana was the Intercontinental Champion a couple of times. He wasn't overly, a promo guy, so to speak. You know, Superfly Snuka had the look and, you know, that kind of crazed promo going on with him. Hogan, of course, is kind of the guy, so to speak. But it would have been great, I think, seeing him in that role. But of course, he stays loyal to the family and you know, unfortunately has the motorcycle accident in 1986 and loses his foot, but you know, stays as long as he can and battles Jerry Lawler in some great matches, and eventually does go on to the WWF, and unfortunately that was near the end of his life and his career. So I think, you know, dying at age 33, he had so much more potential and so much more that he could have offered, I think, us as fans.
The bigger what if, I think, too, when you look at that, is what happens if you, at that stage in 83, if you remove Kerry from the dysfunction of the Von Erich family? Because let's face it, I mean, they were just rock stars that did whatever they wanted down there, and they're all, by all accounts, they were great guys. Looking at Kerry and how he stayed true to his family instead of leaving until essentially the promotion was shut down in the early 90s shows that. But you know, had you removed him from all of that dysfunction, you know, would he have escaped some of those demons perhaps? So that's also a big what if, not necessarily what the impact on the wrestling business was, could have been, but what might the impact of being in the WWF and away from the family, what would the impact on Kerry have been?
That's a great question. I never thought of it that way, but you know, because there has been critics out there and you know, obviously we as fans don't know the true story of the ins and outs and what happened there, but you know, we know that three of these young men, these brothers, Mike and Chris Von Erich included, took their own lives along with Kerry. And there were a lot of issues. Where all those issues kind of stacked up and were they not getting the help they needed? Or, you know, I think, you know, even in 2019, we're still faced with a lot of substance abuse problems or mental health issues. And I feel like through the years, though, people are talking more about it and kind of taking that stigma away. But, you know, you do wonder what if the pressures of, you know, because they were wrestling royalty in Texas. And we mentioned in 1984, Kerry was deemed the most popular wrestler. And this is the year that Hulkamania was born. And I've always kind of looked at the year and PWI awards as legitimate voting. And maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But Kerry Von Erich certainly was, you know, that it factor, especially for holding the title for just 18 days in 84.
Yeah, I read Bill Epper's book, and I can't remember. I know that the top 10 rankings were arbitrary, mm-hmm. but I can't remember if the end of the year awards, how they came to those. But if they weren't legit, it was still a representation of what they assumed their readers would think. And so if he wasn't officially voted, he was certainly right there as one of the most popular, for sure. And, you know, you alluded to his later run in the WWF from, what, 90 to 92, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that he got that. And I think I mentioned this to you in an email or on social media before, but there's a special that the WWF had in Royal Albert Hall in England, mm-hmm. and it ended with a big battle royal, but before they had some singles matches, and Kerry was on there, and I watched all of his stuff from that time pretty closely, and watching him come to the ring, and he was, you know, clear-eyed, and apparently, from if you listen to the people around him, he was for a while clean when he first got there and doing well, and then he kind of slipped into, and just watching him, he was looking around and looking up at this just grand place where they're having this big event, and you could see him soaking it all in, and you just knowing what was coming down the pike just a few short years later, it was neat to see him having that moment and performing, going from the Texas Sportatorium to performing all over the world.
Yeah, that I do remember you telling me that. I have not seen that particular. I am going to look it up now and watch that. But where do you stand on, because when he went to the WWF, and like I said, I was stoked. I remember it very well. It was my senior year of high school, that SummerSlam when he wins the Intercontinental title from Mr. Perfect. He comes in as the Texas Tornado, though, and they still acknowledge the Von Erich name, but he, you know, quickly. And this is in an era when Ricky Steamboat comes back and is just the Dragon, and Steve Kern is Skinner, and, you know, you've got these guys that have taken on new identities, trademarks, and yada, yada, yada. Where do you lie, though, on the whole Texas Tornado thing? I know a lot of Von Erich purists that hated that moniker for him.
Yeah, I liked the name, the nickname attached to the Von Erich name.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of changed up his finisher, and he started using the discus punch, but he'd set it up with the claw in the middle of the ring, and then he'd turn around and do the discus, which was cool because he was the, you know, state record holder for the discus throw, so that still fit with his persona. So I liked it was very WWF, for it. But like you mentioned, I didn't like when they started taking away the name and just calling him by the Texas Tornado. I didn't like it with Steamboat. I didn't like it with him. With a guy like Steve Kern, who becomes a completely different, you know, character as Skinner, mm-hmm. that's a different situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, to have a Von Erich at your disposal and to have him in these high profile matches, you know, one of my favorite matches he was in was when it was all the, you know, the Warriors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also Survivor Series, when it was him, Ultimate Warrior, and the Road Warriors and the Legion of Doom. And just how neat the modern day war. And so it was neat how that all came together, too. Thanks to Kerry being in the WWF for that short time.
Now, and
so, yeah, I hated to see him stripped a bit of that legacy of his name.
And we'll stick with the early 90 part for just a couple more minutes here and then go back into the 80s. But there was a point, which I didn't know this until just a couple of years ago, that Kevin had a dark match against Crush in the WWF. I think it was mid to late 91. I wonder what kind of dynamic that would have presented had Kevin shown up, and could he and Kerry have been tag team partners? I'm assuming that's maybe perhaps where they were going to go. What are your overall impressions and thoughts of Kevin?
Yeah, that's he was so small for what the WWF was using at the mm-hmm. time. So perhaps Vince saw that and just thought he just doesn't have the right size, and he's just not the right fit right now. It would have been really cool, although when you look at the fact that they had Owen and Brett for a long time there and didn't even acknowledge it,
yeah,
you know, who knows what kind of gimmick he would have tried to slap on Kevin and not even acknowledge that the two were brothers. Who knows? But I had never heard that. That's interesting that he was there for the dark match. And you know, I bet I'd heard in the '80s when he was interested in Kerry that he didn't want Kevin or any of the other brothers either. So it doesn't surprise me that he didn't go after him in the 90s.
Yeah. Well. So, you know, obviously in the WWF, Hulk Hogan is the big baby face. The NWA had the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and both of these guys, like the Von Erickson and World Class, when you're the top dog, your friends get jealous, they betray you. We saw it with Mr. Wonderful, we saw it with the Macho Man, we saw it with the Road Warriors and Ronnie Garvin and Barry Windham, you know, all turning on Dusty Rhodes. And then in World Class, you know, the Von Erichs, when the Freebirds get rotated out and leave the territory, then, you know, Chris Adams and Brian Adidas and Iceman King Parsons, all these guys who were allies to Kerry and Kevin and David turned their backs on them. So, I mean, obviously this family, you know, and Fritz is kind of running the show, as we mentioned earlier. Did you ever think, or should they have ever tried to turn the family, you know, because you know, later in later years, you mentioned Brett and Owen, we saw them feud, and then you see, you know, the Steiner brothers split up. Would a Von Erich versus Von Erich feud have worked back in the 80s, do you think?
I don't think it would have in the 80s. I think that they might have rioted at the Sportatorium, mm-hmm. and maybe burned it down, even though it was made of steel. They would have found a way to do it. But definitely in the 90s, when you saw the shift, and how many times can you repeat the same scenarios with the same villains and heels and that sort of thing? So, yeah, I mean, a Kerry Kevin matchup in 1992 or 1994 or when, you know, would have been incredible. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because the booking from the mid to the late 80s for WCCW for World Class was just fantastic. I mean, you just gave a litany of just legit heels that had so much heat and really gave the Von Erichs a run for their money, and you knew they were going to come out on top anyway, but it was still so engaging and intriguing to watch, and the fans that were there live, you could see, even though there were only a couple thousand people that crammed into the Sportatorium, the pop. I mean, it was so loud. And, you know, the initial early days of World Class, they were doing things that Vince wasn't even doing yet as far as TV production. Mm-hmm. And then I think it just, they got to a point where they stopped investing in it, and you know, they started to get stagnant with the way that they presented their product, when the WWF certainly, but even you know, late 80s NWA had, you know, with TBS, they had some shows that started to kind of outpace World Class as far as production values. And so the booking was great, the wrestling was great, but the presentation wasn't all that great. And I think that when you have that national audience on ESPN, to not continue to develop from a television production standpoint, I think that played a big role in that, along with then all of the tragedy that befell the Von Erichs during that time period. I think those two things together really started the you know, the death march of mm-hmm. World Class.
Now, you know, and I like your perspective too, because as we mentioned earlier, you actually have a master's degree in pop culture, right?
Yes.
So, you know, obviously when we watch TV shows, correct me if I'm wrong, but the term jumping the shark comes from Happy Days, when the Fonz literally jumps a shark on the episode. But what is the significance of that phrase?
Sure. So the phrase essentially means when you have nothing else left to do narratively with your character, with the plot involved with your characters, then you start to really contrived event. In the case of Happy Days, it was the episode where the Fonz jumped a shark on skis. Mm-hmm. And so that stayed with, because Happy Days had essentially at that point run its course. What else do you do with the Fonz? How do you try to make him cooler than he already is? You can't. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it comes from.
And I don't know if this moment is equivalent of that, or if this is kind of when they, you know, family ties, they add the baby to the family, or growing pains. But we get a new Von Erich in 1986-ish when Carrie is injured, as we mentioned earlier. Cousin Lance comes in. The problem was, though, even though he kind of looked like a hybrid of Carrie and Kevin, I thought, you know, had kind of Carrie's build but had Kevin's athleticism, if you will. But it was like kind of went over like a fart in church, where the fans just did not get that into him. Now, do you remember much about Lance Von Erich?
I do remember Lance, Cousin Lance. It was a lot like Coy and Vance.
Yeah. On the Dukes of Hazzard. That's right. That's right.
Season.
And perhaps that's a better comparison there.
Something about cousins just coming out of nowhere that just never work in a long form medium. Yeah, the big issue with Lance was that some people already knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
That he'd and I can't remember his name before that. I know he made his hay in the Portland territories, but he'd wrestled in Texas before. He'd wrestled in Oklahoma. He'd been in the Texas territory, and so people knew that he wasn't a Von Erich. So if for this to work, I mean, you really had to go find somebody that was an unknown. And, you know, you could have worked that into the storyline of, you know, this is Cousin Lance from, you know, Montana, and he's been working the fields, and so we got to train him up as a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And because if it's somebody that people didn't know, he's going to be green. But that's okay. Work it into a storyline. They were grasping at straws. Fritz was really grasping at straws with the injuries. And you know, they needed warm bodies, and they needed them to be Von Erichs to continue the draw there. And so, yeah, Lance was I don't know if it was a jumping the shark, because like you said, there were still stories to be told with all the other wrestlers they had there. It was that they needed more Von Erichs, and they were running out.
And do you think that that's kind of what ultimately resulted in all that pressure that we've, you know, read so much about? Because, you know, when you think of baby faces from World Class, I mean, obviously the Von Erichs are at the top level there, but they never really, it never really felt like that torch or that ball was handed to anyone else. And, you know, yeah, we would see Chris Adams or Bruiser Brody or Iceman Parsons kind of come in and be that, you know, that Macho Man to the Hulkster kind of moments, if you will. But was that kind of the demise of the family, was Fritz's short-sightedness of not going outside of his own family to generate those stars?
That's an interesting theory. It certainly probably played a role at some point when you have Carrie, you know, coming in and wrestling on a surgically repaired ankle that you know, he was told he shouldn't wrestle again, much less that soon. And if you had that other baby face waiting in the wings, that might have helped lessen the pressure. But really, I mean, the Von Erich name giveth and it taketh away. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wouldn't have been as big as they were. A small Texas territory that,
yeah,
you know, landed a national spot on ESPN and you know, put you know, this family on the map. I don't think World Class becomes World Class without the Von Erichs. And so if you're trying to also create these other big superstars there, it would be at the expense of the Von Erichs. So I don't know. I'm sure it was a delicate, you know, act that Fritz was trying to walk there. And, you know, how do you go with somebody else when the Von Erichs were so darn popular?
Right. And so, you know, and as you were saying that, it reminded me of the debate of, you know, Hulk Hogan and Rowdy Roddy Piper. You know, without that, you can't have that mega superstar babyface without a red hot heel to kind of get that rivalry going. And obviously the Freebirds were that rivalry early on. And like you said, they would go away, but they would come back and they would kind of rekindle those flames. Would the Von Erichs have been as popular without the, you know, that nemesis of the Freebirds kind of, you know, twisting that knife, so to speak?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think they still would have been as popular, but just I don't want to say not as popular, but boy, that feud in the early 80s, I mean, it was just a license to print money, you know?
Right.
It was golden. Everything they touched for several years with that feud was gold. And so I think that was really a launching point for them. So, yeah, I think that did change the game a bit for them. And we have to play the what if that never happened. What other memory do we have in its place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Right. And, you know, also that what if, you know, what if Vince McMahon was orchestrating that? You know what I mean? Like the national, the worldwide audience that would have been reached with that, you know, happening in the WWF. You know, you had Hogan and Piper, and Snuka and Piper, and, you know, I think of those great rivalries as a kid. You know, and Von Erich Freebirds is my top three, definitely my top five when you think back on those feuds and rivalries.
Yeah, absolutely. Every kind of era is defined by a few of those, right? And you just mm-hmm. named a couple. And
yeah.
Then certainly for world class, it was almost always defined by Freebirds and Von Erichs. And so it's what put them on the map. And it certainly helped propel the entire Von Erich family to this just mythical, you know, persona that they had throughout the rest of the 80s.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a heck of a run. It was a heck of a ride for them. And as a fan, you know, I mentioned it before, Kerry Von Erich for me as, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 year old kid, you know, getting into wrestling, he was as big as Hulk Hogan was in my eyes. You know, there was something about him, you know, before One Man Gang and Kamala and some of those bigger guys went to the WWF, they were in world class, and Kerry Von Erich was body slam. You know what I mean? Like he was that guy. And, you know, they all, I really think that had Kerry had that platform and maybe, you know, a bit more in that charisma department, he could have been viewed by more fans just as fondly as Hulk Hogan was at the time.
And think of the, you know, unfortunately, the mid to late 80s when the WWF was gobbling up all these people. But as you said, mentioned the One Man Gang, Rick Rude, mm-hmm. the Ultimate Warrior, you know, they all had a short to medium stint in world class before ultimately ending up in the WWF. And wow, you know, what if they'd made their home there? What if world class was financially and you know, stable enough to, and had the foresight to see what Vince was building and try to build something comparable with those guys,
mm-hmm.
and how much more would that have done for you know, all of Von Erichs, but Kerry specifically? And I think, you know, you mentioned about when Kerry got the NWA title, you know, how they chose between Kerry and Kevin. I think the NWA was still the, you know, governed by all the different territories there, and so they had to vote. And I think that Kerry was just the clear cut. He was more well known. He, like you said, he had the look a little more than Kevin did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so the, you know, those in the business knew that Kerry was the, you know, the biggest of all those stars there, and decided he'd be the one to get the belt there against Flair. So, but yeah, if those guys, I mean, imagine a heel Dingo Warrior versus Kerry Von Erich in 1989.
Yeah.
If Warrior had stuck around, I mean, just some of those, yeah, some of the matches that, you know, short-term feuds maybe that could have been developed further. And yeah, we missed out, I think, as World Class was declining and Vince was growing, I think that it really robbed us of a lot of interesting Von Erich versus matchups, for sure.
Yeah, that is a great point. And I had not really thought much about Dingo because I think Dingo Warrior's prominent time in World Class was around that time when Kerry was still convalescing from the motorcycle accident. So, but those would have been some great scenarios and some great matches as well. Travis, as we kind of start to wrap things up, what do you think the Von Erich legacy is in 2019? We mentioned, you know, Ross and Marshall Von Erich are the sons of Kevin, and then Kerry's daughter Lacey was involved with wrestling for a little bit and has stepped away from that spotlight, but I've seen Ross and Marshall and they're a big part of MLW now, and Kevin was actually at the last big event that they had. I still maintain that they have a bright future and would love to see them at NXT or in the WWE at some point as well. But what do you think the overall legacy of the Von Erich family, you know, because we all talk about the tragic parts of it, but obviously some talented athletes and young men as a part of that family.
It is certainly the tragedy is one of the first things that that everyone's going to think of, as well they should. I think that it's a cautionary tale of you know, a family that just had so much, and they if you listen to the people that were there and listen to some of the shoot interviews and things of that nature and hear about the boys and just how, you know, the popularity that they were born into and just and had at such a young age, they never really learned how to handle it. And I think that contributed to most of their downfalls and demons and things of that nature. So, you know, I think it's a cautionary tale of the industry and being in a wrestling family, as so many of them, unfortunately, wrestling families end up with a lot of tragedy. It's a tough business, as we know. The industry will, you know, chew you up and spit you out, even if you are part of a legacy like the Von Erichs. Mm-hmm. But also the you know, just the joy that they brought to that territory, what they did there at the Sportatorium, the fact that Von Erich is still such a huge name in Texas and in Dallas specifically. And yeah, I saw the MLW War Chamber, I think they called it. Mm-hmm. And that was really neat to see Kevin's return to Dallas. And there was a little segment that they had on there where he took Ross and Marshall to the land where the Sportatorium used to be. It's now just an empty field. And they all took a small rock from it. And that was neat to see. So, yeah, I'll definitely be following their careers as they move on. But, yeah, I don't know. There's an overall sadness that hangs over this family. And, you know, so sad that Kevin's just the last one left. I'm glad that he's found peace, lives in Hawaii, and his sons are now, you know, heading down the path, and hopefully they'll learn from that. But you know, they were inspirational to so many people. So really depends on how you personally look at them, and you know, what their matches and what their time in wrestling meant to you. I think everyone's kind of going to look at them and come away with a different feeling and takeaway.
Very well said. And as you were talking, and I don't know why, obviously we knew they were from Dallas, but when you specifically said the word Dallas, it triggered the memory. Chad and I went to the last WrestleMania that we attended, was WrestleMania 32, which was in Dallas. And we did go to, as morbid as this may sound, we did go to the cemetery, to see where the family is buried. But, I remember that Sunday at WrestleMania, The Rock comes out and he does the big flamethrower thing and comes to the ring and gets confronted by the Wyatt family. And he throws a discus punch and actually referenced it on social media later as a tribute, as a shout out to Kerry Von Erich. So, you know, someone who had, you know, unfortunately been deceased for 20 plus years at that point, and for the one of the hottest names in the history of wrestling to throw that tribute out to him, I thought was pretty awesome as well. But I echo everything you said. It is in the eye of the beholder, and you know, younger fans today probably don't understand or get the legacy. But I have so many fond memories, and like I said, it had not been that first match that I saw with Von Erich and Kerry and Ric Flair in that cage, I don't know if I would have been hooked. I'm sure I would have been hooked at some point, but that definitely, because I had been around it before, and it was finally that night, for whatever that reason, I became a fan. So, Travis, is there anything else you want to add? I know that you are busy with other podcasts and social media. You're at the Travis Yates on Twitter, but what else would you like folks to know about you?
Well, first, Kevin, but I just want to go back to what you were saying there about that match in 82 with Flair. Uh-huh. I think that the reason it stands out to you and so many other people is I think that does sum up who they were at the time. You know, the Von Erichs were the ultimate baby faces. I mean, they were altruistic. The whole thing that started that feud between the Freebirds and the Von Erichs was Michael Hayes was, you know, tired of Flair cheating, and so he took it upon himself, I believe it hit him with a chair, and then, you know, told Kerry to cover him and win the title. And Kerry said, I'm not going to win that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what started the whole thing, is that he refused to stoop to that level, and that kicked off an almost decade-long feud between the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. So that just shows and this was a time when being the ultimate babyface was cool.
Yeah. You know?
And so, you know, for fans, most fans that are our age, at least, that's what they're going to certainly remember. And then it was sad as we got older and learned kind of the dark tale behind what we saw on TV that was really hard to take. But you can catch me every month on Positive Cynicism with Chad, and you follow me on Twitter. If you're a pro football fan, I write for an amazing website, Pro Football Network, pfn365.com. you can follow them on Twitter, and I'm all over the place.
A busy guy for sure. And I really do appreciate your insight. And I love listening to you on Chad's Positive Cynicism shows. I think you bring a great perspective with your education, but then also your childhood. And you know what you're talking about. And it definitely comes through on podcast. And I would love to have you back on again at some point in the near future. And we'll tackle another topic if you're game.
Yeah, always. I'm always game to talk wrestling, so I'd be happy to come on anytime.
Alrighty, again, he is at the Travis Yates on Twitter, and we are at my123cents on Twitter and Instagram. We will talk again next week. Have a great week, everyone.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.